And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, February 3rd, 2022. Howdy, Dave.
Hello, Melody, and happy Carrot Cake Day.
Yum, yum. One of my favorites.
How about that? Yeah, more importantly, it's also National Missing Persons Day, which, of course, focuses the country's attention long enough to recognize a missing person. I was surprised to learn that in the U.S. alone, 2,300 people are reported missing every day. In fact, there's more than 90,000 reported missing Americans. Certainly leaves a profound void, if not a fillable space, especially those who've experienced it. If you believe you've seen a missing person, please call 911 immediately to report it to your local police or call your local FBI office. Back to you.
Do they put faces on milk cartons anymore?
Good question. I haven't seen one in a long time. We get the plastic cartons. Mm. I don't know if I don't believe they're on there.
Mm. No. Well, you know, I don't know if that have ever helped or anything like that, but it was always, and you know, they were all children. Usually they were just the children.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess we've all become just kind of desensitized against the, you know, how.
Well, yeah, unless you have the Amber Alert on your smartphone.
Well, gold, we needed an alert today. Gold, well, it's basically flat, still holding an 1807 for most of the day. Silver is down 27 cents at 22.45. Platinum was down 2 at 1,041. Palladium was down $50 at 2,410. The USDX today was down 0.59, 95.40. Crude oil, whoo-wee. I guess this is what will happen when you, you know, start going into areas we shouldn't go. But again, hey, crude oil buck 83 to the upside, finally punched over 90.09. I think that was a long time since it's hit then, 2012, I think, maybe 2014, somewhere around that range. When we were at those levels. So not a good sign for crude oil pumping up over 90. Paper markets today, the Dow is down 518, 35,111. S&P was down 111 at 4,477. The NASDAQ was down 538. Woo-wee! 3.75%, 13,878. See, if they just would have leave them drop.
Nah.
You know, just leave them drop and let them go and get it done and over with. Would you please? Asia markets were mixed. Hang Seng was positive. And let's see. The European markets were all negative. And for some reason, I'm not getting a reading on my 10-year. There it is. 1.82. Boy, did that pop. 1.829% on the 10-year yield. So I guess they were blaming everything on Facebook. That's why the NASDAQ fell as much as it did today. And, you know, there's always the culprit that they'll find to place blame on everything. So we'll see how it rides out. Dave, I guess the big day is really tomorrow when the jobs report comes out, right?
Yepers.
So with Wednesday's report, you know, down, what, 400,000 jobs. Hey, but I bet the unemployment rate went down.
I know, right?
Don't make me laugh, okay? But, yeah, you know. Or at least it'll stay the same, but, you know, something silly like that. But the I don't know if this is the reason why oil had gone has risen If there's anything else going on, Dave, that made oil go up as much as it did, but you have the situation in Syria that they was announced today, supposedly killed a ISIS leader in a special forces raid. And I didn't listen to any of the details of the raid or anything like that. 13 people have died, including children and women in this raid. And, you know, Dave, I know we got different opinion here, but I'm thinking to myself, they go after this guy, this ISIS leader in Syria, but yet they're giving money to the Taliban in Afghanistan, and that whole area is falling apart, creating all kinds of terrorists and so forth. So it's like, okay, you know.
I do question that practice. Unless the feeling is without the bribes, it would be worse for particularly the women and children in Afghanistan.
That isn't going to nah.
But these are a brutal backwards group of men.
You know, so you know, it's like so. My question is, what was the real message here? Is that what popped the oil up over 90?
Oh, well, I mean, I suspect it had something to do with it. I think more than that, there was any geopolitical volatility affecting prices today, it was probably more the Russia-Ukraine uncertainty. I don't believe there was any OPEC plus goings on or action.
Yeah, well, old Vlad's in watching the Olympics. I can't imagine anything going on.
The guest of honor of Xi Jinping.
Vlad. Oh, jobless claims, they came down last week. How about that?
I know.
Slightly lower than expected. 238,000 for the week ending January 29th. It was a little bit lower than the estimate, but
watch for next week's revised figure.
And what do you think that'll be?
I bet you it's going to be higher.
I bet it will be too. Well, it depends. It depends if they feel like lying or not.
Oh, now come on. Oh. Not our government.
No, of course not. Of course not. Census Bureau data shows that more than 8.7 million workers missed time in late January into February. Well, it's only February 3rd, so most of that was in January. 2 million more said that they were out of work due to their employer closing for pandemic-related reasons. Almost 1.5 million more said they lost jobs because their employer shut down permanently, Dave.
Well, that tells me that, you know, in reality, the unemployment rate cannot have gone lower.
Any wagers for tomorrow?
No.
Okay.
No, that's one area. That's an area that's as bad as Bitcoin. With all due respect to certain listeners, I find it interesting that, you know, economists these have got to be banker economists that are optimistic the trend is going to reverse itself. And it undoubtedly will eventually. I just don't see cause for this overflowing optimism, and it's part of the ongoing Wall Street mentality of, you know, take all this bad news and try and put a smile on it. Look, there's even though everyone who's receiving some kind of unemployment benefit dropped to 2.1 million And the fact that that's down significantly from its peak of 18, over 18 million a year ago. What was it, close to 25 million at its highest?
I believe so.
In 2020. That's still a lot of people. And it doesn't even count. I mean, it doesn't. These unemployment numbers don't count people that are so discouraged that they haven't looked for work in at least 4 weeks. That doesn't mean they don't want a job. It means, you know, a number of other things we won't get into now. But anyway, it's interesting. They're talking about a slowdown of gains in jobs tomorrow being about 150,000. I wouldn't doubt, like some of these pessimists who believe that we may have had a net loss of jobs for the month. But we will see first thing tomorrow morning.
Well, you know, on productivity, Labor Department today, they released a report showing that productivity rebounded by as much more than, of course, anticipated. Of course, why wouldn't it? In the fourth quarter of 2021, the report said labor productivity soared 6.6% in the last quarter, after tumbling by a revised 5.0% in the third. The substantial rebound in production, a measure of output per hour worked, came as output skyrocketed by 9.2% compared to almost 2.5 increase in hours worked. Productivity data continue to be heavily influenced by the pandemic and will likely stay volatile. This is all according to an economist at Oxford Economics, Lydia Boussour.
Yeah, Lydia.
Yeah, I know. You know Lydia?
I know Lydia like you know Lydia.
Okay.
But hey, unit labor costs edged up just 0.3% in the fourth quarter after a 9.3% rise in the third. Now, that's less than what they were expected to in the fourth quarter, 1.5%. Some are saying this much smaller than expected uptick came, could reflect that maybe the rise in inflation is not as bad as it has been and that perhaps it has peaked. We shall see. Just remember, inflation is ever present in our lives, even if we're not being told about it, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm. Well, we're quietly or soon to be, I guess, the Federal Reserve, Powell, will be raising rates here, supposedly, in March. Well, the ECB, the European Central Bank, hey, they decided to keep their key interest rates unchanged. And it doesn't matter that they have record rises in inflation. So they're keeping their rate is remaining at 0%. And the rate on its marginal lending facility sits at 0.25%. So, again, it's any type of lack of action is coming at a time of increased pressure on the European Central Bank with inflation continues to creep up month after month, with the most recent hitting 5.1% in January. So while the bank says that the higher inflation is going to fade throughout the year, transitory? Yeah. Oh, my, these central bankers, they do cause me to chuckle. But the president, Christine Lagarde, said inflation is likely to remain elevated for longer than previously expected, but is expected to decline in the course of this year, they hope, Dave, they hope.
That they do, Melody, although she did add, if price pressures feed through into higher than anticipated wage rises, or if the economy returns more quickly to full capacity, well, then inflation could turn out to be higher. But she did say, with the upside surprise we've seen, I can tell you there was unanimous concern around the table of the governing council about inflation numbers. She also noted that her ECB members want to take the right steps at the right time and is determined not to rush into a decision unless we had a proper and thorough assessment. Now, this latest decision to hold steady comes as market participants have started pricing in 2 rate hikes for the ECB this year, although Lagarde and her colleagues have tried to play down that possibility. Now, they do see inflation falling from 3.2% later this year to 1.8 next, and in 24, and almost virtually in half, and actually down, well, from 5.1 to 1.8 sometime
Dave,
next
Dave, let me
year.
Ask you a question. Probably the only thing in order to bring that down to 1.8 would be a complete depression. I mean, wouldn't it? I mean, that would bring down.
Oh, sure.
You know, so
I think they must be very optimistic about supply chains unraveling, or excuse me, I guess getting better. The opposite of unraveling. And thus, suppressing, I mean, going up to meet, creating more of an equilibrium that in the long run will put a damper on demand, that in turn will reduce inflation. That's my guess. Now, their decision to stay put does come a couple days after last week's decision by the Bank of England to raise rates another quarter of a percentage point for the second straight month there.
Well, the reason I said that is because, I mean, the inflation is monetary and, you know, not just supply chain issues. So I'm thinking if they're really thinking that the rates are going to come down, maybe they're anticipating a bigger turn in the economy. But then again, they would pump in that money into the system and, you know, so I guess that's...
I guess.
Yeah, so it would only increase the inflation. It wouldn't really would help unless you had a lag time or something. So I don't know what they're smoking, but they need to send some over to the United States. But anyway, mortgage rates remain flat, and we also are heading into a break. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
All right. I just wanted to hear that crescendo, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody, taking the rest of the program off, taking care of client business. We're at 1-800-375-4188. Melody was saying, just as we were headed into the break, about average long-term mortgage rates remaining flat for a third straight week after a rise of about 0.5%. Average rate on the 30-year loan held steady at about 3.55 from last week, according to Freddie Mac. It stood at about 2.73 one year ago. Average rate on 15-year fixed-rate mortgages, popular among those who refinance their homes, fell to 2.77. about 3 basis points from a week earlier. 1 year ago, that rate was 2.21. Now, although they remain historically low, home loan rates have been rising to levels not seen since early in the pandemic. Last week, the Fed signaled again it would get a series of interest rate hikes in March. That remains to be seen how that will eventually affect treasury rates and thus mortgage rates. We'll certainly let you know. Freddie Mac's chief economist, Sam Cotter, says they expect rates continue to increase, but at a more gradual pace. Therefore, a fair number of current homeowners could continue to benefit from refinancing to lower their mortgage payment. Mortgage apps, applications for mortgages, that is, declined 7.1% last week. The drop was led by a roughly 13% decrease in the trade seasonally adjusted refinance index. Now, the MBA forecasts that 30-year mortgage rates will actually hit 4% by the end of the year. Now, briefly, economic activity in the service sector grew in January for the 20th month in a row. I didn't realize that. The services purchasing managers index registering 59.9%. Even though that was down 2.4 percentage points from December, still, anything over 50% is considered a plus. There are several other indicators there, but it's more of the same. I mean, again, the prices index registered 82.3. That was down 1.6 percentage points, again, suggesting that inflation could be moderating. Let's see, what else? I guess 15 service industries reported growth, although there was pullback for many of the sub-indexes. That's all we'll talk about that. Now, I don't know if you saw this this morning. It was an early start to the day for Joe Biden's nominees to fill vacancies on the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. They're having their confirmation hearings today before the Senate Banking Committee. Pushing back against critics, one of those nominees said she would not make it more difficult for any industry. That's any industry to obtain bank loans. Sarah Bloom Raskin, who's a former Fed governor and deputy treasury secretary, nominated to be the Fed's vice chair for supervision, essentially the nation's top bank regulator. In response to Republican charges that she, if confirmed, would discourage banks from lending to oil and gas companies because of her views on climate change. Now, the White House has disputed that view, and today Bloom Raskin said she wouldn't be able to take such steps anyway as vice chair for supervision. She said it's inappropriate for the Fed to make credit decisions and allocations. Banks choose their borrowers, not the Fed. Well, yeah, maybe, but that's what the Fed does, is make credit decisions. And they do it in big numbers. So, you know, I think that's a little naive, if not disingenuous. She added that it's inappropriate for the Fed to choose winners and losers, and doing so is not the proper role of the Fed. Well, I do agree there, although it does that all the time, either consciously or unconsciously. I mean, just look at the income inequality, racial inequality, what have you. Now, the Oil and Gas Trade Associations have criticized Raskin's nomination, though not all have explicitly opposed her. Chamber of Commerce urged the senators to simply raise several important issues during the confirmation hearing. In fact, some banking trade groups actually congratulated Bloom Raskin on her nomination and haven't opposed her her role. Raskin was Maryland's top bank regulator 2007 to 2010 and has won praise from leading Maryland bankers for taking a collegial approach. Now, the Senate panel is also considering the nominations of Lisa Cook and Philip Jefferson to the Fed board. If approved, they would vote on the Fed's interest rate policies and on oversight of the financial system. Cook is the first black woman to be nominated to the Fed board, and Jefferson would only be the fourth black man if confirmed. Senator Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania criticized Bloom Raskin and Cook while expressing support for Jefferson. Cook has come under attack from conservative political commentators who have suggested she's just unqualified for the position. Toomey said Cook is engaged in extreme left-wing advocacy and has supported race-based reparations, promoted conspiracies about Georgia voter laws, and sought to cancel those who disagree with her views. She's an economist at Michigan State University and a former staffer in Barack Obama's White House. Has a PhD from UCal Berkeley and undergraduate and other degrees from Spelman College and Oxford University. Today, Cook said she sees fighting inflation as the Fed's top priority, saying it's a grave threat to long-sustained expansion, which we know raises the standard of living for all Americans and leads to broad-based shared prosperity. Jefferson, he's an economist also, dean at Davidson College, North Carolina, also said rising inflation is a major risk, and said the Fed must remain attentive to this risk and ensure that inflation declines to levels consistent with its goals.
nothing earth-shattering. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I suspect the committee will eventually vote out all three to the floor of the Senate, although that vote may be delayed if there aren't any Republican votes for them with the recent stroke of Democratic senator from New Mexico. He's out for several weeks in recovery. Now, the stunning jump in home values over the course of the pandemic has given homeowners record amounts of housing wealth. And what they choose to do with that could have impacts on the broader economy. Now, according to CoreLogic, annual home price gains averaged 15% last year. What's that? 2.5 times the 6% rise in 2020. Strong pandemic-driven demand, record low supply, and record low mortgage rates conspired to create those hefty gains. Bidding wars are now the norm, according to the National Association of Realtors, and desperate buyers are competing with investors who want to cash in on the hot market. Danielle Hale, who's a chief economist for Realtor.com, said, while we expect this year's buyers will eventually see some relief from the 2021 frenzy, home shoppers continue to face challenging conditions in the early days of 2022. As we talked about, there are relatively few home sellers in 2021. For those who did list their homes, the returns were, well, apparently well worth it. Profit on a typical home sale last year was just over $94,000. That's up 45% from the average profit in 2020 and up 71% from pre-pandemic profits. And the vast majority of local housing markets participated in that growth. Todd Tita, who's chief product officer at Atom, ATTOM, produced those numbers, said, no doubt there are warning signs that this surge could slow down this year, but last year, go down as one of the greatest years for sellers, one of the toughest for buyers. That will be interesting. What are people going to do with that $94,000? Have they already put it into a down payment on another house, on a retirement home, on a larger house, on a smaller house? That'll be interesting. Now, the amount of tappable equity, that's the equity above 20% usually required by lenders, for them to back a mortgage, grew by $2.6 trillion last year to a record total of $9.9 trillion. It's a 35% jump in a single year. Now, the average homeowner now has $185,000 in tappable equity. Now, that's a lot of potential spending power if consumers decide to use a good chunk of that wealth. You know, the personal savings rate shot up during the pandemic and is only now starting to come back to pre-pandemic levels. And with inflation at a 40-year high, that added spending power could continue to drive demand and prices higher. So the only thing that might stand in the way of homeowners tapping all that wealth, outside of selling their homes, that is, yeah, rising mortgage rates. They won't want to do a cash-out refinance because they'd likely have to pay a higher rate. Home equity line of credit's a possibility, but interest rates on those are going to be rising as well. Now, here's a story that'll be sure to get your crawl. Certainly got mine. A resurgent stock market last year, a flurry of new companies with IPOs, and a revival of global deal making have meant that a lot of banks made a lot of money. And now, particularly the big banks are significantly increasing rates for their most valued employees, the deal makers, the rainmakers. And Manhattanites are uncorking $2,000 bottles of wine, buying bigger homes in the fashionable Tribeca, and even snapping up yachts. It's a long-awaited moment for a generation of rising executives. Morgan Stanley, the Too Big to Fail bank, reports that its compensation costs went up 18% last year. Goldman Sachs spent about 23% more per employee. Bank of America raised its comp for its big deal makers by 50%. These earnings are the highest that Wall Street bankers have received since 2009. Remember some of those stories, the height of the Great Recession, when we were seeing tens of thousands of people being hurt by the implosion of the big banks and insurance companies, people jumping out of high-rise buildings, being found dead in with self-inflicted gunshot wounds in hotel rooms, when at the same time these mega banks were giving record bonuses at the time. Really obscene. Well, Wall Street bonuses this year have been directed supposedly at the best performers and deal makers, but they're not going to be spread like any kind of peanut butter, according to former Fed Governor Betsy Duke. The biggest bonuses at Goldman Sachs, for example, were as high as 50% for their top performers. But not surprisingly, the CEOs are the ones receiving the highest pay increases. Morgan Stanley CEO James Cormann, $35 million payday after a 6% raise last year, worth $2 million. J.P. Morgan's main man, Jamie Dimon, got an even bigger bump at $3 million, though his total earnings are just $34.5 million. And Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon also received a $35 million dollar salary last year, $23 million of which was paid out in performance-based restricted stock units, stock options. Warning Solomon's, quote, outstanding individual performance. Solomon and Gorman are now tied as the highest-earning chiefs in U.S. banking. Wave of bonuses sweeping Wall Street is not only the result of a lucrative year of banking, junior bankers feeling burned out by the crushing workloads during the pandemic, well, they're getting pay raises from an average of $85,000 to $110,000. For many junior employees, however, these are small perks compared with the swaths of deals and high earnings that their employers pulled off last year. Amazing, isn't it? Let's take another break. Give you some time to let that sink in, and we will be back after these few important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Boy, if you think prices here are high, I'd stay away from Ankara. Turkey's annual inflation rate came in at 49% today, hitting a nearly 20-year high and eroding people's ability further to pay for just basic things like food. The Turkish Statistical Institute said that their consumer price index increased by just over 11% in January from the previous month, and that the yearly increase in food prices is more than 55%, but 49% overall. Certainly, that would not sure what it would create here, but that's the highest there since April 22, 2002. And that's in a country facing already an economic upheaval and a currency crisis with the significant devaluation of their lira, triggered by a series of interest rate cuts by its controversial central bank. President Recep Erdogan has declared himself an enemy of high interest rates, insisting that they cause inflation, a stance that actually contradicts established economic thinking. Turkey's central bank has cut rates by 5 percentage points in September to 14% before pausing them in January. Erdogan vowed earlier this week that his government would reduce the spiral of high inflation with each passing month and completely eliminate it after a while. Opposition parties have questioned the Statistical Institute's independence and have challenged its data. For example, the Independent Inflation Research Group put Turkey's actual annual inflation rate at a stunning 115%. That's on a par with where Venezuela was. But before there, their inflation rate went just into outer space. Well, interestingly, Erdogan replaced the head of the Statistical Institute last week. No reason was given for that change. Now, staying in that part of the world, each new move Vladimir Putin makes has left Western officials, and here in the U.S., more fearful. He's preparing for a very real war. Month of diplomatic talks has achieved really nothing. I mean, Russia's alarming military buildup keeps growing. Now we're joining him. By joining him, I mean we're sending more troops that way. NATO, other European countries, the same. And his first public comments about these spiraling tensions, Putin yesterday accused the West of actually goading Russia into a conflict. You got to be kidding. Between 100,000 and 130,000 Russian troops are now said to be stationed on the border, near the border with Ukraine. And that seems to be growing now every day. Saw drone videos today of major encampments near one of these areas. I think it might have even been in Belarus near the border. At a heated meeting of the UN Security Council on Monday, U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield said there's evidence that Russia intends to expand its Belarus presence to as much as 30,000 troops. There are few signs that would distinguish a bluff from legit preparations for an attack. So the West isn't taking any chances, it looks like. As I mentioned, the Pentagon's placed 8,500 U.S. troops on heightened preparedness to deploy to NATO countries in Eastern Europe, which Biden has said will happen in the near term. UK, Poland, and the Baltic states have transferred weaponry and training forces to Ukraine, warning that a Russian invasion would have massive ripple effects across Europe. And Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky said at a press conference yesterday, this is not going to be a war of Ukraine and Russia. This is going to be a European war, a full-fledged war. That's how it starts. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, World War III can't be far behind. Let's hope for the best.
Now,
just as it dominates our economy, big tech now dominates Fortune's annual ranking of corporate reputation. That's what Fortune magazine says this morning in its annual World's Most Admired Companies. Ugh. For the 15th straight year, multinational Apple stands in Fortune's number one spot, a fitting coronation, some say, for the world's most valuable company. It's important to note that Fortune's list is based on a poll of 3,700 corporate executives, directors, and analysts. The top 10 after Apple are the no-nonsense, no-income tax-paying Amazon, Microsoft, Pfizer, Walt Disney, Berkshire Hathaway, big tech monopoly Alphabet, the parent company of Google, the union-busting Starbucks, Netflix, and number 10, drumroll please, five-time felon J.P. Morgan Chase. Fortune says seriously on its website, as a global pandemic limped into its third year, meanwhile, companies on the front lines of the medical battle gain new respect. Pfizer, co-developer of one of the COVID-19 vaccines, vaulted all the way to number 4, appearing on the all-star list for the first time in 16 years. And Danaher, number 37, whose COVID tests and drug development equipment are pivotal tools in the fight against the novel coronavirus, made its top 50 debut. Enough said, ladies and gentlemen. Enough said. I try to shy away from gossipy stuff, but this will have more ripple effects throughout the corporate media. We know now, leaders of CNN, CBS, Fox News, and others have been forced to resign in public scandals over the past couple of years. And that's been pointing to corporate media's struggle with its own accountability. Many staffers haven't necessarily been surprised by the conduct leading to these resignations, but their seemingly invincible bosses were brought down by behavior that, well, in some cases, were an open secret. CNN Jeff Zucker's resignation over the weekend, prompted by a relationship with a longtime colleague, shocked even its top executives. Again, not the relationship itself, but that he resigned. Zucker's relationship with his executive vice president and chief marketing officer was apparently common knowledge among not just senior folks at CNN, but among many media insiders in general. Radar Online published a gossipy story on it in early January, but Zucker's recent resignation follows other scandals that have rocked the TV industry in recent years. Roger Ailes resigned as chair and CEO of Fox in 2016 after a sexual harassment lawsuit brought by former anchor Gretchen Carlson. Les Moonves stepped down as chair, president, and CEO of CBS in 2018 after reports revealed multiple allegations of misconduct. And John Skipper quit as president of ESPN and co-chair of Disney Media Networks in 2017 following an extortion plot related to his alleged cocaine use. Now, Zucker's failure to disclose his relationship with a subordinate, while a leadership and judgment failure, was certainly not a crime. But let's face it, if Zucker hadn't resigned, he would have been terminated. He supposedly proposed to stay through the Warner Media spinoff that's coming, or through the launch of CNN Plus. But Warner Media CEO Jason Kilar said his exit had to happen immediately. Now, speaking of shenanigans, Meta says its Facebook app lost about 1 million daily active users in the most recent quarter, its first ever drop. The number reinforces the sense inside and out of the company that the Facebook social network is now a legacy product for Meta, where the focus has shifted to newer realms like messaging, private messaging, Instagram video, and the metaverse as it is, or as it will be. While Facebook's core app still produces much of the company's revenue, new features like Facebook's TikTok copycat called Reels are the primary drivers of growth, and no longer the basic news feed. On a recent call with investors, CEO Mark Zuckerberg said there's been a shift of engagement with its apps toward video products like Reels. Those are harder for the company to monetize compared to video products in the news feed and in stories, which, you know, is strings of video and text. Zuckerberg conceded that the company expects continued headwinds from increased competition for people's time. TikTok is a big one. Meta stock plunged in after-hours trading yesterday in response to weak revenue growth forecasts for the first quarter. In fact, was down over 25% in late afternoon heavy trading today. Those weak forecasts, attributable to continued headwinds from Apple's privacy changes, show the vulnerability of Facebook's business model being tied to targeted advertising against social networking, as opposed to search. Google parent Alphabet posted a huge earnings beat, mostly tied to growth of search-based ads, plus YouTube ads. Meta, well, they're now betting its future on the metaverse, which they say is intended to create a digital universe that puts physical distant people closer together. Yes, I'm already in the process of upgrading my avatar. How about you, ladies and gentlemen? I believe that vision is still many years away. Now, last today, some international manufacturers have had it with sky-high shipping costs and empty shelves. So guess what? They're bringing production back to the West. Globalization for decades has resulted in many industries moving to Asia, Apple included, to chase cheap labor costs. At the same time, expenses for air and ocean freight alike have ballooned as a result of the pandemic, erasing much of the competitive advantage of producing in the Far East. And some companies don't see that changing anytime soon. Pierre Mobility, the Austria-based maker of KTM motorbikes and Husqvarna electric bicycles, is setting up a factory in Bulgaria to make close to 500,000 e-bikes a year for customers in Europe, which is its biggest market. CEO Stefan Pierre said this week the health crisis has started the process that will result in the supply chains returning close to home. Quote, the logistics costs to ship stuff from China to Europe currently are 10 times what they were before the pandemic, and they won't fully come down again. And he added, to ship products around the globe, given those costs, it only works for high-end bikes. For entry-level bicycles, you need a continental supply chain.
We will change the system. Now, good luck. Pierre said many of his rivals are looking at doing the same, as requirements for working capital and logistics issues no longer make it sustainable to just source parts and bikes from countries like Vietnam and Taiwan, while 70% of end products are expected to be sold in Europe. In 5 years' time, we'll have a continental supply chain in Europe for electric bikes, Pierre said. The big players are all looking. Specialized, Giant Cube. They're all doing that. They're coming closer to their markets. It may take 3 to 5 years, but it will happen. Now, Pierre says he's also reserving space at the new factory for the assembly of components like brakes or suspensions. The big success of our group is close control over our supply chain. It's too soon to say whether Pierre's move is the start of a full-blown reshoring stampede. But the longer the pandemic remains an obstacle to global trade, well, the more it will make sense for more companies to rebalance supply chains with more local and regional footprints. You got the German suit maker Hugo Boss said last year we're shifting sourcing from Asia to Turkey and Portugal. Stanley Black & Decker said it's ramping up a hand tool facility in North America. That's good news, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see if it takes hold. I know another thing that's taking hold. It's the end of today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch, hopefully. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks to our engineer, Todd, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. Be safe out there. Bye-bye.